Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. More than 20,000 children have been killed in Gaza since October 7th, 2023, according to Save the Children. That is one Palestinian child killed every hour on average by the U.S.-backed Israeli assault. Two children have been killed every day since the ceasefire began, according to the UN. The Los Angeles Times reports that Gaza's living conditions are worsening amid strong winds and hypothermia, and that has killed five people. Later in the show, we'll discuss Heal Palestine, an organization founded in 2024 to get children and families the care they desperately need. But first, we're discussing the incredible film, The Voice of Hind Rajab, which is now screening in theaters across the country. On January 29th, 2024, a five-year-old girl named Hind Rajab got into a car along with her aunt, uncle, and four cousins to flee the Tel Ahawa neighborhood of Gaza City after the Israeli army ordered an evacuation. Before they could escape, an Israeli tank fired on the car, killing everyone inside except Hind and her 15-year-old cousin, Leon. Their uncle in Germany contacted the Palestine Red Crescent Society to tell them about his brother and his family who were trapped. First responder Omar Alkam asked for the brother's phone number and location of the car. And when he called the number, Hind's cousin Leon answered, saying, "They're shooting at us. The tank is next to me." Within seconds, Omar heard her scream as she was shot and killed, leaving five-year-old Hind alone, trapped in the car, surrounded by the dead bodies of her family. Hind answered the phone when Omar called back and spent 3 hours begging to be rescued, but the route was not safe enough for the ambulance to make the 8-minute drive. 8 minutes. Several rescuers had been killed on past missions, and Mahdi, the supervisor on duty, did not want even more people to lose their lives. The Voice of Hind Rajab is based on the events of that day and uses the actual recordings of Hind speaking with Red Crescent dispatchers who stay on the line with her and desperately try to save her life. In this clip, you will hear Hind Rajab saying, "I'm scared. They're shooting. Come get me, please." The dispatcher asks, "What's your name?" She answers and says, "Please, don't leave me. I'm all alone."
Just begin to.
When The Voice of Hind Rajab screened at the Venice Film Festival, it received a 24-minute standing ovation. If you're in the Bay Area, The Voice of Hind Rajab screens tonight at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco at 6 p.m. with additional screenings through January 2nd. It will then screen in Mountain View, Sacramento, and Modesto. You can find additional screening information at The Voice of Hind Rajab film.com. Joining us to discuss this incredible film are two guests. Odessa Ray is an Academy Award and BAFTA-winning filmmaker and producer of The Voice of Hind Rajab. Odessa Ray also produced the highly acclaimed Oscar-winning documentary Navalny, which is about Russian dissident Alexei Navalny, who died on February 16th, 2024 at age 47 in a remote Arctic prison colony. Hi, Odessa. Thank you so much for your incredible work on this film, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Saja Kalani, an award-winning Palestinian, Jordanian, Canadian actress and spoken word poet. Saja Kalani won the Best Actress Award at the Carthage Film Festival for playing Rana, the lead role in The Voice of Hind Rajab. Rana was the Palestinian Red Crescent emergency operator who was on the phone with Hind trying to keep her calm. Rana is still active with the Red Crescent in Ramallah today. Hi, Saja. When I found out you were going to be on the show today, I had to take a deep breath because your acting was absolutely incredible in this film. I don't know how you did it. So thank you for your work on this, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so sweet of you. I'm so glad to be here.
I wonder, Saja, as a Palestinian, I read that all of the actors were Palestinian. The extras were all Palestinian. I just wonder what this experience has been like for you. Everything from receiving that 24-minute standing ovation to going to the Golden Globe Awards over the weekend. The Voice of Hind Rajab was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film. I'm seeing on social media, so many people have heard about Hind's story and are now seeing the film for the first time. And I just wonder what this experience overall has been like for you. Just to highlight not only Hind's story, but so many of the children who've lost their lives and the children and the families who are still suffering.
I mean, as a Palestinian artist, this film is really, it's been connecting all of us in such a disconnecting world, and just going around and talking about it to as many people as possible, allowing as and many people to see it. I believe my job as an artist is not just to tell the truth, but to safeguard it. And that's the beauty of and the power of cinema, too. I think it's giving it that space and allowing those to meet it with humanity.
And Odessa, what has this been like for you? You were also at the Golden Globe Awards over the weekend, and you have been to so many screenings speaking to the audiences who are just really overwhelmed after they see this film. Can you talk about what this experience has been like for you in making sure that this story is not put on page 10 in the newspapers, because the killings are still happening, the suffering is still happening in Gaza?
Yes, exactly. And that's the importance of things like the Golden Globes, you know, whatever about red carpets. But for this kind of film, it gives it a platform. And this kind of film needs that platform. That's part of the reason why we brought on the famous executive producers, Brad Pitt, Joaquin Phoenix, Jonathan Glazer, Alfonso Cuarón, Rooney Mara. You know, when we were finishing the film, we knew that this kind of film is going to need support. And so I reached out to a few of them, my fellow producing partner, Jim Wilson, who produced Zone of Interest and won the Oscar for that. He reached out to Joaquin, myself, to Brad, and we just said, we just showed them the film. We didn't fully think they would all want to come on board and support, but when they did individually say, we'd love to support, we just thought that this kind of film needs that backing, and it's been very helpful. And that's what, you know, these awards are also about, and sharing the film to audiences has been extraordinarily powerful. I would say the most powerful screening for me was recently, about 3 weeks ago. I brought the film to the West Bank, to occupied Palestine. We had a screening in Ramallah and a screening in Jenin, a screening in Birzeit University. It's continuing, actually. There's a screening series happening around the West Bank. And I was part of the first screening in Ramallah. And to show the film to a full Palestinian audience in Palestine and have them feel like this is their film and that we have in some way documented their pain in the last few years. It's been, and their pain is much, much longer than just the last few years, but this piece of it, that what has happened in Gaza, they were so moved. And for me to experience that screening with them was incredibly powerful.
That's incredible. What did you hear from people? What stood out for you?
I think they felt gratitude that some, you know, that people heard and had turned one of the stories of the many children who'd been killed in Gaza, had turned one of those numbers into a face, into a living, breathing human that you can connect to. And they felt like it's their film, you know?
There's an incredible article that I hope everyone can see, and there's a number of photos in the New York Times, Lives Ended in Gaza, from March 4th, 2024. And I think it's just so important to humanize people, because it's one thing to say these horrific numbers that over 70,000 people have lost their lives, but every single one of them have stories. And there are so many more hints that we will never know about. And Saja, I think what really, there were so many things about the film that were striking, but the one thing I've been thinking a lot about over the last 2 years is that Gaza is not in a remote part of the world. Gaza is very close to where the Palestine Red Crescent Center office is, and I cannot imagine what that must have been like. So you've got these emergency operators taking these calls 52 miles from Gaza, knowing that people are being bombed. And can you just remind our listeners, why were these emergency calls transferred there when the bombing began? Why were they taking calls in the West Bank from people in Gaza in the case of Hind, who was trapped in a car?
Because the Red Crescent in Gaza was bombed, so all the transfers were directed to Ramallah Center. Mm.
And just the fact that they were so close, and yet to learn that this van was only 8 minutes away from Hind. And that's the other thing that was really striking, is you watch these videos, you read these articles, but then to learn how this process worked, that they had to go through so much red tape to let the drivers know that they had the okay to actually go save Hind. I mean, that was really shocking to learn about.
You know, before I joined this project, of course, I had heard of Hind's story, and I was actually following it on the news in 2024. But all these small details I did not know of until I read the script. I knew that the ambulance was close, but I didn't know it was 8 minutes. I knew that, you know, obviously they tried their best, but when you actually read the specifics behind certain angles that they even tried to tackle with, and still they were met with failure. At the end of the day, they can't really do anything without the green light. And even with the green light, you see what happens at the end of the film. So it's really, you're like, damned if you do this, damned if you don't. So it was ridiculous, almost too shocking to believe.
Right. And just to let listeners know, and again, I hope you can see the voice of Hind Rajab, just to see how this plays out in real time. But to send the ambulance, again, 8 minutes from Hind, they could have saved her life if they left right when they got the phone call. I mean, in case they got shot, which ended up happening. The Palestine Red Crescent has to call the Red Cross in Jerusalem. They call a unit of the Israeli military defense that coordinates activities in the occupied territories. The soldiers on the ground send a secure route so the ambulance can move without being targeted. But then they don't send the Red Crescent the route directly. It has to go through the unit of the IDF and then to the Red Cross. And then the Red Cross contacts the Red Crescent. So it's just, there's so many lines to cross. And then in the end, they get the green light. And yet the paramedics are shot and killed. And then Hind eventually loses her life. And Saja, I understand that you all did not hear the voice of Hind until you started working on this film. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So the first time we heard her voice was on set, on action, and that was the brilliant idea of Kauthar, the director, who gave us she asked us before if we wanted to listen to her voice during rehearsals, but she recommended that we do on set, and we all agreed that that just makes more sense. And we thought we were ready. You know, you read the script, you know what she says, so you assume that you're prepared. But then when you hear her voice, it's a completely different thing. And it shows you also, while we were filming, it was this constant reminder to me of how to never underestimate a voice, and how, you know, I really appreciated that Kauthar didn't reenact her voice and she used it. I think it was the backbone of the film, and it shows you almost like a testimony to what happened. Because like you said, like Gaza, it's not an abstract place, you know, it's not a remote area. And I can't imagine what it's like for the Red Crescent workers, you know, to be in such close proximity yet still be unreachable. You know, that kind of proximity carries a weight that I feel never leaves you. And after I, you know, I just performed I did their job, but like I just told their story versus they're still active to this day on ground at the Red Crescent. They've dealt with multiple Hindrajabs. This is unfortunately one case of many. And that's why when people ask me, you know, how are you able to do this role and take on such a story, to me, it's like I'm just telling it. Versus they're living it. And it was this constant reminder of how important it is for me to not just share the story, but honor it as much as possible.
What was it like for you to meet Rana Faki, the Palestinian Red Crescent operator who was on the phone with Hind Rajab trying to keep her calm?
Oh my God, it was such an honor. I mean, the first thing I did when I got the script was Kauthar gave me Rana's contact. So I got on the phone with her. I think the first time we spoke for maybe 4 hours. She's so generous with her time and she shared her perspective with so much detail. And, you know, when you're playing a real character that is not only alive, but is still active in the job that they're doing, there's that added pressure of, you know, it's a responsibility, but at the same time, a necessary one for me to make sure she's honored. But she gave me a piece of advice that I really appreciated. She said, "I don't want you to copy me or mirror. I just want you to listen to her voice and let that guide you." Mm-hmm. And I think that's what helped me, you know, also explore it as an actor internally rather than mimic someone. And she gave me a bit of like creative expression for me to really allow myself to feel it rather than just, because when we were on the phone with Hind on the headset, you not only hear Hind's voice, you also hear our characters. We were speaking simultaneously and it was word for word what was said in the recording. So Rana was also in a way subconsciously in the back of my head every time I was talking to him, and it was this reminder of this is a real person. You're not just performing. This is someone who, you know, it's anchored in truth. Mm.
Saja Kalani is an award-winning Palestinian, Jordanian, Canadian actress. She won the Best Actress Award at the Carthage Film Festival for playing Rana Faki, the lead role in the voice of Hind Rajab. Rana was the Palestinian Red Crescent emergency operator who was on the phone with Hind trying to keep her calm. And we should say that Rana and so many are still active with the Red Crescent in Ramallah today, taking calls from people in horrific situations in Gaza. We're also joined by Odessa.
In fact, I was just there.
Oh.
I will just add that I was just at the Red Crescent offices when I went for the screening in Ramallah. Mm-hmm. And I visited their offices for the day. And it's incredible. First of all, the location in the film looks exactly like the Red Crescent offices. Mm. Rana is still working there. Omar is still working there. Nesreen. But Mehdi, the boss, he did actually quit after the move, after the Hind incident. He couldn't take one more. Oof. He couldn't take losing more people. Like he says in the movie, "I will quit after this," you know? And just to reference something that you were talking about a bit earlier, I hear from a lot of people, oh, they either know the story or they're afraid to see it. And I would say to them, it's not your life. It's, you know, a 90-minute film, bear witness. That's the least we can do to the Palestinian people and the pain that they've been through. And most people, when I've had the experience, who think they know the story, they go into the film and they come out and they say, "I didn't understand it at all," actually, because there's so many details that you know, you understand through the actual film. It's not as scary as you think it is as when you go in, is what I'm trying to say, I think. Mm.
Since you brought up Mehdi Odessa, and again, Odessa Ray is the producer of The Voice of Hind Rajab. It's, oh my gosh, I felt for him because Omar, one of the other operators, became so angry with Mehdi, who was the supervisor, because again, the ambulance is just 8 minutes away from Hind. But Mehdi says, without coordination, they could lose their lives. And he pointed to photos of rescuers who were killed on past missions, saying these were the best rescuers. We need to guarantee a safe route approved by the Army so they can carry out this rescue. And he says, I just cannot lose more people. And I just, you just feel for him because he's fighting. They're all so angry that they cannot save Hind.
But they've lost so many workers, honestly, in the last couple of years. They have lost, I think, almost 60 of their paramedics in Gaza in different horrific ways. And the coordination process is extremely complicated. As you see in the film, the Red Cross actually refused to finish the coordination. And they had to call the Ministry of Health in the West Bank to try and continue it. And they told me there, when I was there in the Red Crescent offices, that usually they're required to do the coordination for around 8 or 9 hours, which, you know, if someone's bleeding to death and you have to do an 8 or 9 hour coordination, I don't think that person has many chances to survive. So it's a pretty crazy system, honestly.
Odessa Ray is producer of The Voice of Hind Rajab. Saja Kalani is an award-winning Palestinian-Jordanian-Canadian actress who plays the lead role in The Voice of Hind Rajab. Rana Faki, who was the Palestinian Red Crescent emergency operator who was on the phone with Hind, trying to keep her calm. You can see The Voice of Hind Rajab if you're in the Bay Area at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco tonight at 6 p.m. with additional screenings through January 22nd. It will then screen in Mountain View, Sacramento, and Modesto. Odessa, when we did our last show about this film, we were told that you had a hard time finding a large distributor. Can you give us updates on that? And how else can people see the film in the months to come?
Yes, well, we do have distribution in the U.S. It's Willa, and they are a smaller distribution. They're feisty, though, and they have put, you know, they're a newer company. They've put a good effort into the film. It's like you said, you did the screening. It's now in the Bay Area and will continue to open in different markets over the next month. You can find out showtimes on our film website, thevoiceofhindrajab.com. And, but yes, after Venice, we did, of course, have hopes for a bigger studio distribution. But, you know, we live in a climate of fear in America, I guess, when it comes to political films, especially. It's been very difficult in the last, I think since Navalny. Navalny was really one of the last big political films that was distributed by a studio. We were lucky enough to have Warner Brothers, but after that, the climate just changed very dramatically, and it's been difficult to distribute political films in the last couple of years.
We have an email from a listener who says, can you talk about the role that a film like this and other art can play in stopping this horror? And it just, we've done so many shows over the last 2 years about how we have watched so much of this unfold on our screens, and it still hasn't stopped. And so many people are asking, what does it take? So Saja, what are your thoughts on that, the role that film and art can play? Because seeing this on our screens did not stop the Biden administration from sending weapons. So what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I don't think art can bring Hind back or, you know, reverse what happened. But I think, you know, I see cinema as a form of memory. I see it, you know, stepping in where we have failed as humanity and try to awaken that side of us. It's resistance also. And it's once it's used in a way to kind of, I'm not quite sure what if this is considered like, you know, stories like this, they must not be forgotten. And like you said, the word humanize, you know, sometimes I question what that word really means when we think of the language behind this, because it's almost like saying they weren't human before and now they qualify to being human. So really, I think just being able to spark such conversations and keep it going and having people that usually who choose to look away see this film, I think is exactly what cinema needs to be is doing and needs to be doing. So I'm very grateful to talk about this film, and I will talk about it for as long as I can. And I really do think people need to see this film. Not this is not from a biased perspective, but really because I think it's awakening something that Hind in a way is kind of reuniting humanity, if I must say.
And your thoughts, Odessa? Odessa, are you still there? You might be muted.
Oh, yes, apologies. I
No
just realized I
problem.
was muted.
No problem.
Yeah, it's hard because you kind of lose hope, right? After the everything is sort of live streamed to our Instagram. But what I do think cinema does and what this film does is it reaches a deeper place where there's an awareness and there's a sympathy that happens through the news cycle when you sit with a film and a child and a story for an hour and a half, and you feel that person, and you feel that your similarities are with maybe your child or yourself and your life. There is a deeper place that it reaches, I have to believe. And I have to believe that all of this will result in some kind of action to stop the insanity, because war begets war begets war. And if we keep If the cycle continues and the killing continues, we're never, there will never be, there will only be unhappy endings.
Odessa Ray is an Academy Award and BAFTA-winning filmmaker and producer of The Voice of Hind Rajab. Saja Kalani is an award-winning Palestinian, Jordanian, Canadian actress who won the Best Actress Award at the Carthage Film Festival for playing Rana, the lead role in The Voice of Hind Rajab. Rana was the Palestinian Red Crescent emergency operator who was on the phone with Hind trying to keep her calm. If you're in the Bay Area, you can see The Voice of Hind Rajab tonight at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco at 6 p.m. with additional screenings through January 22nd. It will then go to Mountain View, Sacramento, and Modesto. Odessa, will this film eventually be available online?
Yes, it will be. We haven't announced those details yet, but it should be streaming sometime early March, I believe.
Okay, and we will bring you information with that. Odessa and Saja, again, thank you so much for your incredible work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for highlighting the film.
Thank you. You can learn more about The Voice of Hind Rajab at KALW.org and click News. Coming up after a break, we will speak with Steve Sosby, founder of Heal Palestine, which was founded in order to get children and families the care they desperately need. We'll also be joined by Dr. Thayer Ahmad, who is currently working in Hebron in the West Bank. He is an emergency medicine physician. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. According to a Wall Street Journal analysis, sales of U.S. weapons to Israel have surged since October 2023, with Washington approving more than $32 billion in armaments, ammunition, and other equipment to the Israeli military over that time. More than 20,000 children have been killed in Gaza since October 7th, 2023, according to Save the Children, and two children have been killed every day since the so-called ceasefire began, according to the UN. Heal Palestine was founded in January 2024 in response to the devastation. They work to get children and families the care they desperately need. And here are just a few of the stories from Heal Palestine. Adam is just 3 years old. He once lived in Rafah with his parents, sister, and brother. On July 7th of last year, while they sheltered in a tent in Khan Yunis, a bombing changed everything. Adam lost his entire immediate family, his parents, sister, and brother. He also lost his right leg. Miraculously, he survived with no other injuries. His grandmother, His only remaining family is now his guardian and source of strength. Together, they were brought to Chicago through Heal Palestine, where Adam received a new prosthetic limb, ongoing medical care, and access to early education. 14-year-old Leon survived severe burn injuries from a bombing in Gaza. She is now in California through Heal Palestine's Global Healing Program, where she continues her recovery with ongoing care, rehabilitation, and emotional support. Joining us is Steve Sosby, co-founder and executive director of Heal Palestine. Steve Sosby founded and led Palestine Children's Relief Fund from 1991 until he left to co-found Heal Palestine last January. For over three decades, Steve has led humanitarian efforts on the ground in Palestine, beginning with arranging free medical care in 1990 for the first injured children from Palestine in the U.S. and organizing the first volunteer medical missions to Gaza back in 1995. Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Rose.
We're also joined today by Dr. Thayer Ahmad, a board-certified emergency medicine physician, global health expert, and board member of the Palestinian American Medical Association. Dr. Ahmad is currently working in Hebron in the West Bank. Hi, Dr. Ahmad. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. Dr. Ahmad, this has fallen off of the front pages, and yet two children have been killed every day since the ceasefire began. It is very cold in Gaza, and there are daily reports of people who are dying of hypothermia. Can you please give us an update about what we might not be reading in the news unless we're really looking for it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, calling it a ceasefire is definitely a misnomer because of the conditions on the ground and the continued siege on Gaza that the Israeli authorities are imposing. I mean, it's very difficult to mount an emergency response and to begin reconstructive efforts when the Israeli military is continuing to unleash fire and bombs on the Palestinian people in Gaza, when the people still aren't able to move freely, when frigid temperatures are causing public health crises, people freezing to death. But additionally, I do want to note that it's been quite rainy this season. And what we're seeing as a result of that is the rainwater is flooding the sewage systems, which is causing a rapid spread of infectious diseases, as well as upper respiratory infections. And these hospitals who were already collapsed while the genocide was raging on, I mean, they are still trying to recover and still trying to be able to provide the services that are needed for the people on the ground. So if you ask anybody in Gaza what the situation is like, they'll tell you that the genocide is persisting, and that even though the fighter jets are not scrambling as often as they were before, that effectively they are being suffocated in the Gaza Strip. They are still being deprived of the basic necessities needed to sustain life. And so I think you hit it spot on. This may not be in the headlines, but the people are very much suffering in a real way that's causing a tremendous loss of life.
Dr. Ahmad, you have conducted five medical missions to Gaza, most recently entering in early 2024. You are now in the West Bank. Have you been able to return to Gaza?
No, I've been denied five consecutive times, and that's not unique to me or special in any way. Many of the healthcare workers that are attempting to go and stand side by side with the Palestinian healthcare workers in Gaza, we're seeing a 30 to 50% denial rate. And these come without reason. It's just the Israelis further causing more harm to the Palestinian people, but obstructing efforts in a way that really makes things tough for any humanitarian organization to be able to do the important work that's needed on the ground. And I just, I think it's also important to note that the Israelis are in complete control of every step of the way when we are talking about aid entering into Gaza. Now, that's whether trucks are trying to enter with food or tent supplies, doctors trying to enter from Jordan into Palestine, into Israel, and then into Gaza with the medical supplies that they have, or people who are trying to get out of Gaza to get the medical care that they need or seek the refuge that they're looking for. The Israelis are in control of all of this, and they make it nearly impossible for any of it to happen. All of this is still happening with Rafah border closed. That's the border between Palestine and Egypt. That has been closed since May 2024. And it just makes the ability for life to exist in Gaza nearly impossible.
That is Dr. Thayer Ahmad, a board-certified emergency medicine physician, board member of the Palestinian American Medical Association. He's currently working in Hebron in the West Bank. We're also joined by Steve Sosby, co-founder and executive director of Heal Palestine. They work to get children and families the care they desperately need. Steve, you have been at this for so long. You were organized with the first volunteer medical missions to Gaza in 1995. You began with arranging free medical care in 1990 for the first injured children from Palestine in the United States. You started Heal Palestine last January. It's really hard to wrap your head around what has happened over the last 2 years, with more than 20,000 children being killed, more than 10 kids losing one or both legs every day. Can you just give us an overview? Given the experience that you've had over the last couple decades, how does this differ from what you have seen in the past?
Well, thank you for that question. I think the issue here is really the scale of the injustice, the scale of oppression that's being imposed on the people, not only in Gaza, where we've seen an active genocide and 2% of the children killed in the past 2+ years, and just incredible suffering, just unimaginable. And there's really no words and no way to adequately describe it in any language, the depth of suffering and what the Palestinian people there are going through. But also in the West Bank, where, you know, Dr. Ahmed, I'm sure, can explain to you, just going from Jerusalem to Hebron itself is an insurmountable challenge. And imagine for patients who need to go to quality health services, which may not exist in Hebron for a variety of reasons. Many patients die on the route. So it's not just related to Gaza, but certainly Gaza has the biggest challenges when it comes to the absolute destruction of the health system, the education system, the infrastructure, the overall society has been completely decimated. And, you know, I started working in Palestine and serving the Palestinian people in a positive way back in the first intifada in 1990. And, you know, it was bad then. I mean, children were being shot then, people were being killed, and all of the aspects of occupation, which are so harsh and brutal, were part of daily life in Palestine, unfortunately. But we never imagined, I never imagined for once, that we would see such a massive, massive scale of killing and suffering, particularly of innocent children. And to the point where, you know, we see now malnutrition in Gaza. We have 90% of the population displaced, and many of them living in tents under these harsh weather conditions, which Dr. Ahmed mentioned. You're talking about children who have not been in school for 3 years. Imagine children growing up without being able to read and write. And what's the long-term impact and consequences of that on the Palestinian society? You have, as I mentioned before, food insecurity, to the extent where now hundreds of children, if not thousands, are suffering from acute malnutrition, and the long-term impact on these children is permanent. You have a mental health crisis in Gaza because the entire population has been so traumatized. And how do you rebuild a society? How do you provide people a sense of hope and a future when everything they've had their entire lives have been decimated and destroyed so graphically, so brutally, and so open in front of the entire world to see? And yet nothing has stopped. As you mentioned at the beginning of this program, arms sales have skyrocketed since the genocide began. And to what extent and when does the world wake up and say, enough, we're not going to allow our weapons to be used to continue to kill children in the Gaza Strip?
Dr. Ahmed, just hearing Steve talk about the fact that children have not been to school in so many years is just devastating. According to Save the Children, nearly 90% of school buildings in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed. And I often repeat this stat during the show because a lot of people do not know that Palestine has one of the world's highest literacy rates, over 97% for adults, and youth literacy rates are nearing 100%. And yet children cannot go to school. And yet I've seen so many photos of kids who want to go to school. They've got a book and maybe a backpack. And can you just talk about that? I feel like, you know, looking at what happened with the U.S. and bombing Iraq and Afghanistan and providing bombs to Israel to bomb Gaza, Americans don't really know the people in these places. And I think a lot about othering. And that's why I think the voice of Hind Rajab is so important. Art is so important. And then also just learning, like, wow, this place has almost 100% literacy rate. I'm guessing a lot of people don't know this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. And everything that Steve mentioned, it really is, it's just so heartbreaking. And I think, you think about what future have we left for the children of Palestine? I mean, Gaza and the West Bank. I visited the Palestinian Red Crescent's headquarters where the call from Hind came. And I visited the desk where Rana, the dispatcher, was there. And after we kind of were sitting and just kind of talking about what had happened, they had taken me down to their warehouse and they had showed me many of the things that had been denied by the Israelis to enter into Gaza. And one thing that really, the image is just burned into my brain is the backpacks that the Palestinian Red Crescent was trying to enter into Gaza and the stuff that they had in there for school children. I'm talking about cartoon books as well as pencils, erasers, just a classic school-aged, children's backpack. And there was one thing that was in there that the Palestinian Red Crescent wanted to include. And it's something that Steve had mentioned. There is this mental health crisis that it obviously is pervasive, but it's something that all of the children in Gaza have been affected by, many of the children in the West Bank. And this book that was in there that the Palestinian Red Crescent was trying to bring into Gaza was a cartoon book for kids under the age of 7, trying to find ways for them to be able to regulate their emotions and to handle anxiety. And it talked about panic attacks. I mean, we're talking panic attacks in children under the age of 7 because of everything that they have seen and everything that they've had to witness and the people that they've lost and the injuries they may have sustained and being starved. I mean, people starving to death is one thing, and it's this extremely brutal process and it's slow and it's painful. But if you're being starved and you survive that, there's not only the physiological consequences that you will deal with for the rest of your life. It puts you at risk for many many health conditions, but there's also the psychological trauma that also sticks with you. I mean, these are the wounds that aren't shown on the surface, that are deep inside. And so the children of Palestine have had to endure so much. And the suffering is there, and they'll be dealing with this for the rest of their lives. So my concern is the dehumanization that's at play, the fact that we can't see them as children. And this is something that, of course, we see on Israeli news channels and different interviews of how they dehumanize Palestinians. But it's also, I mean, in Europe and in America and the United States, just to this last point that I'll make about Hind, you talk to anybody who's paying close attention to what's happening in Palestine, who stands in solidarity with Palestinians, who hopes for the future. What happened to Hind and what happened to so many other children? It breaks you. It breaks you in a really, really intense way. But I remember on a US media channel that one of the anchors, when she was talking about Hind's story, they had referred to her as a Palestinian woman. I mean, who in their right mind would call a 6-year-old a woman? And that's an intentional thing that's at play here. And so that otherizing that you're talking about, that dehumanization, I mean, it's part of why we got to where we got, and that's something that, we still have to combat, and it's still an issue.
Dr. Thayer Ahmad is a board-certified emergency medicine physician, board member of the Palestinian American Medical Association, who's working in Hebron in the West Bank. Steve Sosby is co-founder and executive director of Heal Palestine. They work to get children and families the care they desperately need. Steve has been involved in humanitarian programs in Palestine for over 3 decades. Steve, the work that you're all doing is absolutely incredible, but also devastating. I read a couple examples of the kids that you're helping. Here's just a few more. Kana, 9, and the twins Nabil and Ahmed, 7, lost both of their parents when the place where they were seeking shelter in central Gaza was bombed. They're now navigating life with loss no child should endure. Through the Heal Orphan Program, our team is providing these brothers with medical care, emotional support, food, and the steady presence of people who will not abandon them. Steve, how does the process work in trying to get the kids to hospitals for the care that they desperately need?
If you mean getting them outside of Palestine for hospitals, right now, since
Right.
August, the Trump administration has stopped issuing visas for Palestinians in general, but stopped issuing visas at a time when we had brought. We had in the country over 30 injured children, and from Gaza getting free medical care throughout the country. Hospitals were providing them free care. Communities were stepping up and taking care of them. And due to some pressure from some right-wing bloggers or persons on the far right who put pressure on the Trump administration, they shut that program down. And now there's no injured children from Gaza who can come here and benefit from the excellent health services that are available in the United States, even if those services are for free. And these kids were not staying. They were coming for treatment, and then we relocate them back to Egypt. You mentioned Adam at the start of the program. Adam just returned to Egypt this weekend after being in the US for several months, getting a new prosthetic limb. Adam is an orphan. His parents were killed, his siblings were killed. He came with his grandma, his only surviving direct relative, and is walking again. And he did not stay in the country. He went back to Egypt, where we're caring for them and taking care of them before until he can be reunited with his extended family in Gaza. And there's literally tens of thousands of kids like him. So getting them out is a huge challenge. We're now reaching out to other countries. Mexico has accepted children. Brazil is going to be accepting children. We're working with European countries, hopefully, to get them to accept injured children, because the fact is there is over 10,000 severely injured children in Gaza who need medical care outside of Gaza because the health system has been decimated and destroyed. And the services that these children need and deserve is not available to them. In addition to that, you have tens of thousands of children with congenital conditions, who have diseases, who have medical conditions which require health services, which are not available in Gaza any longer because the main hospitals have been destroyed. Physicians have been arrested and killed and have left the country. And the quality of service there has declined rapidly, not because the doctors aren't good, but because anesthesia supplies aren't available, antibiotics are not available, pain medication is not available, basic medication and medical supplies are being banned from entering Gaza. Meanwhile, the hospitals, the building to rebuilding supplies for the hospitals that have been bombed, is not available. So the health services do not exist for the most part, just emergency medicine, and even that is challenged with the lack of supplies. These children who have congenital heart disease or have cancer, who have some kind of medical condition that requires treatment at a specialized center, they also have to go outside for treatment. So there's tens of thousands of kids who need treatment outside of Gaza. They can't get out. The borders are closed. As Dr. Ahmed mentioned before, every decision to allow these kids out is in the hands of the Israeli government. And also the European countries, our country, the United States, has blocked these kids from coming. So what do we ask from the Palestinian people any longer? I mean, their children are being injured and killed. There's organizations that want to help them, that can help them, that are being blocked. And what can we do for them now? How can we help save the lives of these children? How can we give them a better future? How can we rebuild their lives when every opportunity and every avenue that existed before or should exist is being denied and being blocked by governments? It's just unbelievable, and it's inhumane. And there's no real, like I said before, there's no words to describe this. This is 2026. Children are being starved. Children are being killed. Schools are being bombed. People are living in tents. Children are dying from hypothermia and from the lack of adequate nutrition and from the lack of clean water. We're witnessing it. We know their names. We know who they are. We see their stories. And yet nobody's stopping it. It just continues. It's been over 2 years now.
Wow. So what can be done to ensure that children can and their families can get out and get the help that they need?
If you're asking me that question, then the governments have to put pressure on all of the authorities to allow the borders to open. There is talk now that the border with Egypt is going to reopen soon. What does that mean for the people of Gaza? We have dozens and dozens of families in Egypt right now who came out for medical care to the United States, returned to Egypt, would like to be reunited with their families. Not a single family is allowed to go back into Gaza. Yeah, and they want to go, even if the complete destruction of their homes, their family, they want to go back to their families, but they're not allowed to. They're sitting and waiting. We have a mom who went to Boston for her child to have neurosurgery. And she has three other small children in Gaza. She hasn't seen them in 2 years now. You can imagine the trauma that she experiences knowing that her kids are in Gaza. She's in Egypt a few miles away, and they can't be reunited. We had a boy come out who lost his leg. His name's Islam. He lost his leg in a bombing. And while him and his mom were being treated in North Carolina, his family was bombed again in Gaza. His father was killed, and six of his siblings were injured. And now they do not have a parent with them in Gaza. They're being taken care of by the 15-year-old brother, and their mom is in Egypt, and their one injured brother, who's an amputee, is in Egypt. And this family is the kids are just trying to survive in Gaza until they can be reunited. We can't get them out. There's no agency. The UN can't help. UNICEF can't help. Nobody's willing to even make the effort to reunite these innocent children with their mother in Egypt. And these stories, there's thousands of stories like these. I mean, this is just, if you were to scratch the surface, the story of Hind, as tragic as it is, as devastating from an emotional point of view as it is not uncommon. These stories happen all the time, every single day. And when you start to hear them, it's not that you become desensitized, you just become very cynical in humanity. And like, how are we allowing this to happen? And how are we able to live with ourselves knowing that it's happening? And that, you know, not only is our government actively involved in it, and we as Americans are actively involved in it, we're taxpayers, but that there's very little outcry anymore. As you said earlier, like, it's no longer on the front page, people have moved on. Yet it's still happening every single day. Two children are killed every day. People are hungry every day. Children are not in school. They're living in tents. It's not stopped. It's gotten worse because the situation continues.
Steve, that's exactly what I was going to ask you. What happens to 14-year-old Leon, who's now in California, being treated for severe burn injuries from a bombing? What happens when she wants to go back home? She can't get back into Gaza.
Correct. So she will
So,
go to. Sorry, go ahead.
please, what happens to these kids and these families?
I mean, we do our best to take care of them. We relocate them to Egypt where we take care of them. We put them in apartments. We put them in school. We continue their mental health therapy. They're all traumatized. We continue whatever medical care if they need rehabilitation. We provide them everything they need to survive and to do well as one can under such circumstances. But ultimately, they have to be reunited with their families. They have to be able to go back to their country. They have to be able to live on their land and to have their homes and lives rebuilt. And that's up to us as the international community. Not just Americans, but the entire international community has the responsibility to put an end to this madness and to start the rebuilding process and to find some long-term solution in which both people can live on the same land in peace, in security, and share the land with equal rights. That's what everybody's asking for, and that's what's going to finally bring an end to this situation.
And Dr. Ahmed, your final thoughts? We have about 30 seconds left.
I mean, there's just probably two things that I really want to make clear. You know, just in reference to the ban that Steve was talking about, I was actually in Dallas when Heal Palestine had brought children there. And we went to, you know, just to greet these children. The community came out. I'm not even from Dallas, but there was such an incredible amount of love and support that was there. To think that that was used and somebody would use the video of those children arriving as something bad, that's. To me, that's what needs to change. And finally, one thing I'll say is don't forget that these are people in Gaza who have had to, who have been forced to leave Gaza, who are descendants of people who were forced to leave other lands in 1948 during the catastrophe. So the generational trauma is there, but there's a new trauma being inflicted on them with the forced displacement. So, you know, history is repeating itself, and you hope that we can do something different this time around.
Dr. Fair Ahmad is a board-certified emergency medicine doctor working in Hebron in the West Bank at the moment. Steve Sosby is co-founder and executive director of Heal Palestine. They work to get children and families the care they desperately need and deserve. Steve and Dr. Ahmad, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.